The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this spoiler review for episode 3 of Shogun, this incredible brand new series that is on FX and Hulu. I am the outlaw, John Rocha, joined by my Hatamoto, Steve Morris. Steve, how are you, brother? My co-host of the Cinephiles here, and people enjoyed our breakdowns of 1 and 2, brother, so you are back again for episode 3. How are you feeling? How are you doing?
I'm good. I am proud to be a Hatamoto in the Outlaw Nation. And I don't think, it was funny, I was just thinking, I don't think I've ever said to you,
yes,
I love the that Outlaw Nation music. I think perfect for you and your show. I think I'd love it. It's great.
Thank you so much. If only I could get a much more complicated video to go along with the music, I think I'd be super happy with the presentation. But you take what you can get in Canva and your limited skills that I have to put this stuff together. But it's very
The Shogun title sequence is beautiful. You could just hire those people. I'm sure they can put together something fantastic for you.
Yeah, I've got a few hundred thousand lying around somewhere. For God's sakes, I should be able to do it. And Steve mentions it. Shogun, that's what we're here to talk about. Episode 3, Tomorrow is Tomorrow. Although I kind of think, Steve, the title should be, you're playing a game of friends and enemies when it's really all about you. And so that was the predominant theme throughout this particular episode here. That was a really fascinating episode. There was a mixture of political intrigue, political machinations, moving pieces around a chessboard, combined with some thrilling action sequences, fight scenes, moments of honor, and fun moments where someone is simulating sexual innuendo stuff on a stick of a boat and sliding through there and escaping. So much to talk about in this particular episode. Steve, your thoughts overall here as we came out of the first two episodes, which were just incredible, sliding into this third episode, did you feel any loss of rhythm, any loss of pace, or did it just get you even more excited to dive into the story that we're being presented to us in this interpretation?
Not for me. There was no, okay. I think they nailed it. And in particular, it's the fascinating difference between novels and film is that there are things they were able to do in the film that were short and tight and to the point that took pages and pages in the book to set up in a much more subtle way. So I really liked it. And can I tell you,
please,
how insane your partner is? Your Hatamoto. I had so much time fun in our conversation that after we did it and I went, okay, are we ready for the third part? I went, I'm just going to read the book again.
And so, for those of you who might have missed episodes 1 and 2, Steve is a very big fan of James Clavell and this particular book and a number of his books. And he's done a lot of research on James Clavell. So him diving back into the book is no surprise to me. How did that go?
I mean, it's the advantage, as you know, is I listen to books at like a really high speed, and so I can get through a lot of pages. It was really fun, and it's so funny. My as James Clavell was my favorite author as a teenager and in my early 20s.
Yeah,
and then as I started to learn more, and I sort of saw the exotification of Asia and some of the sexual things and some of the gender things, and I was like, and in my 30s and 40s, I kind of went, I still really like the books, but this is very much a white guy. His fantasy about what this should be. Right. And what's funny listening to the book now and watching the show now is I'm like, look, all that is true. Mm-hmm. It's still true. But I think the books are still great and they're still doing a great thing. Yes, they're from a certain era, but they're still doing a great thing. And I think that the show is really highlighting some of the stuff that's really cool about the approach.
Well, I think it's fascinating too, Steve, because if you look at the greatest of the Akira Kurosawa films, and certainly we've covered a few on the Cinephiles, it's always a mixture of the Western influence combined with the Eastern influence. So it can get a bit muddled. It can get a bit mixed in your mind. And so delineating or separating out what is the Western romanticism of Japanese culture and samurai culture versus what is the actual in, feeling in Japan towards the Japanese culture of that time during feudal Japan and the samurai approach to things are two different things. And so you kind of have to walk that line respectfully to understand your own interpretation of it. But certainly this show has focused more on the Japanese storylines, which we mentioned in our review on episodes 1 and 2, much more than the John Blackthorne storyline, the white man storyline that we got like in the 1980 series with Richard Chamberlain. So that's been fun to see. And we should dive into this episode here because I thoroughly enjoyed it and really loved it. And so I want to talk about it with you. And I want to take it into sections, to be honest with you. Normally I do the storylines, but I think this is a show, this episode lent itself to discussing sections here. So I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this. When we start off, we have Torunaga talking to Yabushige. Yabushige thinks he's going to die. I love this, his fascination with death, where he's written multiple wills, and this is really the best one he's ever done, which is hilarious. But he stands his own. As we said in episodes 1 and 2, Yabushige is such a fantastic and interesting character.
He is.
Walks in knowing he's going to die, thinking he's going to die. He puts up no fight, no defense, no nothing. Walks in, and Torunaga quizzes him, essentially interrogates him about Ishido and what Ishido promised him. And Yabushige very honestly says, yeah, he offered me a seat in the council. I didn't want that. I just wanted to increase my fiefdom and do my thing. And he thinks he's going to have, he makes a comment, I can't do that without my head. And Torunaga says, no, you're going to keep your head, but this is what I need you to do. I need you to bring the foreigner. I need you to bring Lady Mariko. I need you to bring all these people to this fishing village and in your fiefdom and guarantee their safety here. So he essentially employs what he knows to be a double agent, but he employs him by relying on his honor, relying on his devotion to him. And this leads us to this sequence outside where they're all lining up to go out the gate. And we have Torunaga essentially pull one of his tricks here to be in this carrying contraption instead of Lady Kiri. So this is a fascinating sequence that leads to these confrontations here. Blackthorne stops one of Ishido's people from looking in there to cover what Torunaga is doing because him and Mariko know what's going on here. And then we end up leading out the door. So what do you think of this opening here, this game of... just intelligence that Torunaga is playing here and understanding he can use people in certain ways and play on their natural instincts or desires because he's somewhat elevated his intelligence at confronting this kind of stuff.
Well, this is why I'd never thought of the comparison with Game of Thrones until I saw people mentioning it when the show started. Mm. But now it's like, no, absolutely. Not only that, I'm sure George R. R. Martin read Shogun and Noble House in Taipan, which is all these books where all the huge casts and all these machinations of everybody trying to get ahead. This is also why, you remember in the first part, I told you that Yabushige is one of my favorite characters, despite the fact that he's a horrible person. But he's just a joy, and their version of it is so good. Yeah. And that scene, I think they do, because I'll disagree with one thing you said. You said that he was sort of Torunaga's depending on his honor.
Yeah,
I don't think he trusts Yabushige's honor at all. Oh, Yabushige, Torunaga knows that Yabushige could easily betray him to Ishido at any point. Right. He's depending upon his self-interest. He is depending upon his ability to manipulate him.
Right.
And this is that. That's why this scene is so good.
Loyalty to himself is what I mean. Yeah,
exactly. Yabushige knows he's going to die, and it's like, okay, I'm cool with this. If I got to die, I got to die. And Torunaga knows that he knows that and is manipulating him and messing with him. And one thing I'll add, just because I am rereading the book, is that this place that he took him to in the book is a place where the Taiko took Torunaga before. And when they made their big deal, and they're like at a high floor looking out of the window, they pissed on the deal. So they both pissed out of this window of this high floor. And at the end of the scene in the book, Torunaga says, let's piss on it. And they piss on the deal.
Wow.
Yabushige, which I was kind of sad they didn't do because I just sort of love that bit. But I think the scene is handled perfectly. And I'm loving Torunaga. I think, Toshiro Mifune aside, I think this guy, he's killing it. And then the only difference I'll say, by the way, of the escape, which I love that you're getting this. Torunaga is the trickster. Torunaga is the genius who's always he's always steps ahead of everybody. One of the differences in the book is that Blackthorne sees that Torunaga has switched places with this woman, and he doesn't talk to Mariko about it. So he thinks he's the only one who knows in the book. But other than that, it's just, you know, they're sort of slightly different choices. But that, I think that sequence of getting out of the castle and the tension around it. And this is also where you start to see, oh, Blackthorn is a valuable person. Like, this is a smart guy. And I think they've made him lesser than, I think, in the first two episodes compared to the book, and definitely compared to the 1980 Richard Chamberlain. But what that's allowing them to do is that he's now emerging as someone who could be a really useful person for Tornaga.
Yeah, it's a great point you bring up, Steve, certainly, because we're seeing him become more and more of the focus with Tornaga by the end of this episode, right, where he's teaching him diving and whatever. But he had to immerse. He had to kind of pull this ruse with this guy who was looking into the women's quarters there, and as they were being carried there, he stopped him from essentially by causing all this fuss and doing whatever. And you might say, look, what Yabushige is doing is definitely for loyalty to himself, but so is a little bit Blackthorn, because Mariko says, when he asks what happens if they catch us, she says they'll kill us all. And of course, in a way, he's also, you might be fooled into thinking he's doing the right thing by helping Tornaga, but he's also doing the right thing because if they do find it, he'll be dead. And so it's also self-preservation in a way, kind of like Yabushige, which is why I look forward to those two going at it again at some point down the road in this show. And I think you make an excellent point about the fact that he can now emerge, because this is a 10-episode series. So there's no rush to make him the focus just yet. Let him grow as Toranaga and Mariko and other people's esteem for him grows, ours will grow as well as we watch him take the lead in certain ways, while he maintains himself as a pretty rude customer in a lot of ways. So, but what did you think about this line here? As a hostage, Mariko was talking about this when Toranaga was essentially traded by his father when he was 6 years old to his family's rivals. Mariko says this: as a hostage, he learned one truth, that enemies are everywhere and friends nowhere. So little hint of a window into understanding Toranaga from Lady Mariko here. What did you think of that?
I think it's a great line, and I think it explains perfectly the Yabushige relationship. You know, as he goes, keep your friends close and your enemies closer. It's like, what the it's so funny rereading the Clavel now is like, it really is true. Every single person in this movie is scheming scheming for how they're going to take over the world.
Yeah.
You know, Yabushige, he wants to be Shogun too. You know, like,
right.
Blackthorn isn't just, you know, and we'll see little hints of it. But in the book, it's like he's going, how do I take the black ship and create a navy that's going to take over this and become become Duke Blackthorn? Even when he's in prison, he's trying to figure out how he's going to do all those things.
Yeah.
And so this idea of the manipulation, this idea of the strategy, the tactics, all of this stuff. And what I think what's brilliant about Toranaga is he knows how to use his enemies.
Yes.
He knows how to manipulate them into doing the thing that he needs them to do for his own self-interest. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. And as we head to Ajiro, I don't know if I'm saying it right, so I apologize to any of our Japanese people who watch the show who would know how to pronounce that. They go into this attack. They're attacked on the road there, right after Blackthorn asks Mariko if Toranaga has a plan for if they get caught. And Mariko kind of takes a hesitation before she answers and says, I'm sure my lord has a plan. So even maybe she's got some questions here. And we'll see Yabushige later say to Toranaga, I wish you'd tell me your plans for a while.
Let me know.
Your stuff. So yeah, just let me know. Let a brother know. But Blackthorn is a bit concerned about all of this. And before he can get too deep into worrying about what might happen if they get caught, they essentially are caught, because Lord Kiyama's men show up here and start raining down fire-laced arrows onto them. We see them fighting them off. We see all of this battle going on here with Mariko and Blackthorn jumping into the fray themselves to help push back Ishido's men. And then the ambush becomes a melee where it looks like everybody is fighting everybody here, because it's nearly pitch black in all of this. We even have one of Kiyama's men asks, are they fighting each other? And just to throw in a couple little facts about this, the stunt coordinator on the companion podcast, Loro David Chartrand Del Valle, pointed out that they wanted the action on the show to feel historically accurate. So there's no flourish, there's no kicks, no flips, no flashy moves. And the thing that Mariko is using is one of those long kind of samurai swords that lady samurai fighters used back then. So very accurate in terms of the equipment they're using here. It's called a naginata is what it is, a type of pole arm with a curved sword at the end. And it was a traditional weapon used by female samurai. But then Yabu Shige joins in to aid Todonaga here, showing his loyalty to him, and says, as I said, one of these days, I'd like to know your plan before it happens. And then what we see is Buntaro, who is Mariko's husband, step forward after he'd had a bit of a hard interaction yet again earlier in the episode between Mariko and him when he was telling her that she's going on this trip and there's nothing she can say about it. So, you know, we've been presented Buntaro as this kind of guy who's a bit of a rough customer, a guy who is domineering his wife. And we've seen Mariko have all these talents that seem to not be appreciated by Buntaro. But Buntaro has a couple of really great moments in this episode, but he's the one that tells them, you guys head to the harbor. We will hold off the armies. And they all take off here towards the harbor. So what do you think of this fight sequence, Steve, and the way this all went down and the shifting of who's in charge, who's on top, and all the stuff that's going down here with the fights and the battles. And then Yabu Shige coming forward here to kind of help Torunaga. And Torunaga revealing that he's there. And for everybody to see, even to his son, who didn't know that he had made the switch with Lady Kiri. What'd you think of this?
So first of all, the Yabu Shige moment of sometime, I hope you tell me your plans in advance. That's great. That's just a great moment. And that's the kind of moment in a movie where you go, or in a miniseries where you go, yes, I'm in, I'm into this relationship. Yeah. I'm signed up. I love Mariko picking up the naginata. That's just, I mean, as you said, it's traditional from the time. And it's very much in the book, because one of the things the book is about and that Shogun is about is that there are these different societies, both of whom call each other barbarians, both of whom are disgusted by each other's certain traits of the other side, and both of whom, particularly Blackthorn and Mariko and Torunaga, learn all the values and the amazing things about the other side. I mean, this is where my fascination with Japan started. And for Blackthorn to turn around and see this tiny woman pick up this big, huge weapon and clearly know how to use it.
Yeah.
And without hesitating to protect her liege lord, that's a really cool thing.
Yeah.
I think too, Buntaro, it's always cool when a film can give you the information that takes pages and pages and pages in the book. You described him perfectly. Mm. He is not a fun guy. You know, there's obviously tension between him and Mariko, which comes, by the way, because Mariko's father assassinated his liege lord, which is Garota, which is the dictator before the Taiko.
Right.
Which in reality, I think, is Nobunaga. And so she wanted to kill herself. She's totally shamed and she's been forced to stay alive. And it's screwed up things for Buntaro. It's screwed up all sorts of stuff. And so, because killing your liege and assassinating your liege lord, that's the worst thing you could do in this samurai culture. But they also do with Buntaro, and I think they did it great, is he's a badass.
Yeah.
You want him when you're in the middle of a battle. You want him on your side because he's unquestionably brave. He's not going to quit. He's tough. And they really do show that really well. And I agree. I'm very happy that we're not doing flips. We're not flying around on wires. They're doing very traditional Japanese martial arts of the era. And I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And as we move on here, Torunaga's faction arrives at the harbor. Blackthorn recognizes the friendly crew on the docks, of course, because that's the crew that he helped out earlier in the series here in those first two episodes. And then we get a shot of seeing all what they're confronted by with all these people, all these forces moving there amongst the alleyways heading towards the harbor here. And then as they get on the ships and they start rowing out there, Buntaro arrives at the dock. He survived this whole battle here to come out to the harbor. And both Blackthorn wants to go back. And even Lady Mariko a little bit, you see, she doesn't say it, but you can see it in her eyes that she wants to go back. And they don't end up going back. Yabu Shige says it's not possible. And Buntaro understands that after he fights off like eight dudes on the dock there, looks at Torunaga. And I'm going to tell you right now, I know he's been presented as a bit of a jerk throughout these first 2.5 episodes, I would say. I got emotional. And I think this is why I love the samurai culture, to be honest. And I'm not trying to gloss over some of the historical aspects. I'm not trying to ignore some of the nefarious stuff that the samurai did. If you do the history of samurai, you know there are ways that they were used or things that they did that were pretty terrible. But like in this moment, it's that sense of honor and nobility, that thing that we seem to be missing nowadays in our world. Bontaro understands he must sacrifice himself and understands he can't go with him, understands that he has a responsibility to his lord, and he, you know, stands up strong, yells out to respect, and Toronaga stands up and yells out his actual name, not the Buntaro nickname they've used for him, and gives him the respect with the bow. And even Mariko, he has an exchange of looks with Mariko without saying a word that shows that, you know, he has love and respect for her, even if he was terrible at showing it. And even she is conflicted with how she's feeling about it, because as we've seen how he treats her, and he runs off into these guys, battles them into an alley. And I haven't read the book, so I don't know. I imagine this is the end of Buntaro. And if it isn't, I look forward to him coming back here. But we see that happen between them there. And we see that Kiyama's men have blockaded the harbor, and Toronaga's galley won't be able to break through. And we see now that Blackthorn tells them to go along to the other ship and move the ship closer to the black ship where the Portuguese captain is at, who earlier in the show had this back and forth with the Portuguese priests about, like, look, my ship is sailing. I don't care what you guys do. I have my faith to the crown. And I think this is Ferreira. He's going to go with his ship. But now Blackthorn goes over there, and then we have this deal between Toronaga and the captain of that ship, and they exchange deals. We hear that he's going to put a church, that Toronaga is going to put a Catholic church in Edo. He's going to give him, like, I think 10,000 silver coins to invest in the silk trade, and he'll get to keep half. And the last part of the deal, though, is that Blackthorn must stay behind, essentially surrendering him to Kiyama and all these other lords who want him dead, including possibly Ishido. And the deal is made here, Steve. But then we get this insane action sequence where Rodriguez and Blackthorn are essentially competing as they row out their ships, Blackthorn using the black ship as a bit of a barrier, a force field to get through Kiyama's men here, and comes out the other side. Rodriguez does not crash him into the side of the rocks as he possibly could have done, and he escaped, and they all escape out of this thing, regardless of the deals that were made. So what are your thoughts on this whole sequence here with Buntaro and then them all negotiating their way out of the harbor, both by force and by negotiation?
Let me ask you this first. Yeah. Were you having fun watching this sequence?
Oh, 100% from beginning to end. Although I thought Toronaga gave up too much, I enjoyed what it all led to. And it got me on board. It's very modern, especially with the back and forth between Blackthorn and Rodriguez.
So I really liked it. I thought it was great. I'll give you a couple of things that are different from the book that I think are interesting.
Please. Yeah.
Is so Buntaro, and it's so interesting because the way they handle it works great. Obviously, it moved you. It was great. He gets to that dock. He's got a little bit of time. He realizes he can't make it out to the ship. He sees all the soldiers. And in the book, he kneels down to commit seppuku.
That's what I thought he was going to do.
Yeah, that's what happens in the book. And Blackthorn is freaking out. He's like, and he doesn't like Buntaro, but he's like, no, he can't. He just swim or something. Do something. You can't let him die. And Mariko explains that the worst thing for a samurai is to get captured, because there will be torture, there will be dishonor. It's much better for him to kill himself. And it's finally Toronaga that orders him not to commit seppuku.
Oh.
And to try to escape. And so that's just it's just different. You know, what happens in the movie is great. The what happens with Rodriguez and Blackthorn on the ship is something I love, and I was sad that they didn't do, which is that Rodriguez goes, hey, why don't you come on the black ship? And Blackthorn goes, no. And Rodriguez goes, I have booze, I have roasted meats, I have bread and butter, I have all that. And Blackthorn goes, okay. And so he goes on the ship, gets immediately drunk and throwing up because he just hasn't had anything like this in a long time. And Mariko is there and the sailors don't know that she speaks Portuguese, and they say all sorts of horrible things about, calls them monkeys, and they talk to her because they think maybe she's a prostitute, and you know, really terrible. But what's good about that scene is that Rodriguez then talks to her and says, look, don't you call us barbarians? Don't you think that we smell? Don't you? And it ends up that Rodriguez is actually married to a Japanese woman, which is why he speaks Japanese pretty well. And Mariko, it's the first moment that Mariko goes, oh, there's different perspectives here. Yeah. But then the key thing is that we have drunk Blackthorn, and Rodriguez's spies overhear that Toronaga has just sold Blackthorn out.
Yeah.
And so he gets mad at drunk Blackthorn and throws him overboard. And to in order to save his life. And then they've kind of worked out this little bit of a deal of how they're going to both get out of the harbor, and watching them play out, pushing each other just far enough. Mm. And it's just a perfect example of, we're both great pilots. We both totally, like, you're the best pilot I've ever seen. I'm the best pilot you've ever seen. And they are fucking with each other and swearing at each other. And it's great. And what they do in the show totally works great. It just doesn't have some of those extra details that I like.
Yeah.
But again, I go, slowly but surely, Toranaga and Mariko and Yabushimi go, oh, this Blackthorn guy, he's special. Like, he's there, because multiple times now, from the when they're in the palanquin and he sees Toranaga to when he's and I have to say, it's one other quick thing that's in the book. Mm-hmm. So in the book, they see all the fireboats and the samurai that are waiting, that are blocking the harbor, and Toranaga says to Mariko, ask Anjin-san what we should do, what's going to get us out. And Anjin-san just says, cannon. And he says, well, ask him how we're supposed to do that. And Blackthorn basically goes, no. And then Toranaga looks over and sees the black ship, and he goes, oh, and turns back and Mariko asks, why didn't you just tell us we should go to the black ship? And Blackthorn says, well, I think he should use his own head some of the time. And Mariko goes, I can't tell him that. And Toranaga's like, what did he say? What did he say? What did he say? And finally, she translates it, and Toranaga just cracks up. And it's just one piece of the building of this friend, of this relationship that's happening.
Yeah, I like the way this was shot. I really enjoyed the direction in this whole sequence and the back and forths and how this all played out. And even seeing the size of the ship as it crushes one of these smaller ships, like, you really, or these, one of these sailboats in essence, or whatever you want, dinghies or whatever. It just kind of shows you the massive power of a ship like this at that time and the speed with which it can absolutely demolish anything in its way. And I liked seeing the ferocity of that. But is the back and forth between Blackthorn and Rodriguez in the book? Because that seemed pretty modern in terms of the things they were alluding to, like your lips on my mom's ass or on the devil's ass, and these, the sexual innuendo with the huge steering rod there. Or what was, is that all just added for the show, or was that part of the book itself too?
No, it's much filthier in the book.
What? Really?
Oh yeah, they're all over each other.
I'm shocked here, man. Okay.
Yeah. There's a lot of thy mother, or thy mother was there first, or you know, a lot of that, and it's really funny. Well, again, this is why I go.
Yeah.
I'm sold on. Well, I don't remember the actor's name is playing Rodriguez, but I am sold on. Yeah. But this is also why I go, picture John Rhys-Davies saying these things. You know, they're really fun.
Fair point. All right, so we get out of the harbor here and we get to the last scene, which I think is really interesting, because during that negotiation scene with the priests, Toranaga has been handed those books that essentially prove that Blackthorn was a pirate and was that was his intention in all of this. And of course, he's been denying it. And now, as we see the sunrise, kind of similar to him watching the sunrise at the beginning of the episode, Toranaga himself there, we see that they are on the ship and they're having these conversations, and he's talking about this. Oh, well, you know, Mariko to translate all of this stuff, and they're having the conversation about him being a pirate. And it's a crime that's punishable by death. But Toranaga, essentially, when he confronts him with it, it looks like he's going to carry out some kind of sentence here. But then he says, but these logs are probably going to take a long time to translate. So in the meantime, I am going to ask you to train or teach a regiment and Yabushige and my son to teach them your tactics, the barbarians' tactics here to counter this stuff, so that when they're attacked, they're going to be able to make moves just like he just did in the harbor and counteract the instincts here and throw them off. So Blackthorn agrees to it, and Toranaga calls him Hatamoto with orders to take those weapons he saved and train a regiment for foreign tactics. And for those of you who don't know, Hatamoto were elite samurai who served directly under the shogun or daimyo, occupying esteemed positions in the military structure. The term's meaning underscores its role as those entrusted with guarding the Lord's standard on the battlefield. And then we have this really interesting sequence. Well, first we have the conversation, I should mention this, but between Blackthorn and Mariko, that's very tender, and she's asking about his family because they had talked about that earlier on the walk, about his daughter, about his son. And he essentially admits that Brandy, you're a fine girl, but my love is the sea. He's essentially saying that he hasn't seen his daughter before his daughter was born. but he's called to the sea. He's just one of these guys that's called to the sea. And he also expresses sympathy towards Mariko very, very genuinely. Very sweet moment between them. And Mariko takes that in because you sense that her attraction to him is starting to grow a little bit. Yeah. And so I like that they don't overplay it. It's just kind of sitting there. And then Toranaga shows up. But the final sequence is essentially Toranaga, who is a very proud lord and, of course, in charge of his people. He's not going to jump headfirst into anything. He has Blackthorn teach him how to dive by diving in multiple times into the water until Toranaga has fully grasped what it is. Then, because he likes to run once he understands he doesn't need to walk, he says, I'm going to dive in and then race you to the shore. And that's essentially how the show ends, with Mariko kind of smiling as she watches this happen. So, Steve, your thoughts on these final scenes here on the boat, on the ship, rather, as we head towards the end of this episode?
So, I have many, many thoughts. The first thing that I like is that in that scene that you describe where they have the rudders, they have, you know, the information that's going to expose Blackthorn.
Yeah.
It's exactly the Yabushimi scene, which is, I have something which could get you killed.
Yes.
But I am choosing not to use that, and I'm going in the exact opposite direction. Mm. And so I really like that. And I think you really get the size of Hatamoto, what that means by Mariko's reaction to it. Yeah. So I think that's really, really cool. I think the scene with Mariko is beautiful, where they talk about the family and all this stuff. And you see, you get that connection. And that's why I think the show is so smart to show her disliking him and not trusting him when we meet him. That's much more than what's happening in the book. Right. And I think, you know, that's classic romantic structure. You know, that's, you know, is that you start off disliking each other and then you come to depend upon each other and respect each other. And I think that scene really, really works well. It's probably the most human and tender moment that we've had in the entire show so far. Is just the two, because there's so much scheming and violence and stuff going on and politics and all this other stuff, that just having these two humans who obviously are feeling pain but also have a sense of duty, and that they're sharing about, you know, that intimate part of themselves, I think is really, really cool. The diving scene, I think they did a great, it's different from the book, but I loved it. I'll tell you what happens in the book, which is that in the book, he dives. And Toranaga goes, well, I want to learn how to do that. And he goes, okay, well, it's easiest if you go down to the lower level and we do a little dive from like, and Toranaga's like, I'm not going to do that. And so he does like an hour plus of belly flops.
Oh,
and all the other samurai are all doing belly flops over and over. And Blackthorn's going, no, it's really, and finally gets Mariko to go down and do a little tiny dive from somewhere lower. And then finally, but you know, he also witnesses everybody's discipline that over and over and over again they're going to take the pain necessary to do this thing.
Oh wow.
And one other element of the book is that in the book they're all naked, and you know, obviously this is something where, you know, this is one of the big elements of the story, and maybe this is something where we can say like the white European perspective found all of this a little titillating, but the different cultural ways of looking at nudity and sexuality is a big theme in the book. And so we got naked Blackthorn looking at naked Mariko and all of the and telling him, basically saying, be cool, this is not a big deal, you know, like you're in this other culture. And that's one of the Blackthorn's big struggles, is like, okay, this is just a different culture, you're there now, you have to be calm, you have to be responsible, you have to understand this. He's like, be cool, but then there's some moments where he has to jump in the water get a nice cold water. So that is definitely an element that is much stronger in the book. And it's probably one of those elements that I looked at as I got older and went, maybe this is really about being just titillating, you know?
Yeah. And maybe that's maybe they kind of address that in an interesting way throughout this episode too, because remember, and I didn't mention this scene, but we're having the doctor kind of stitch him up at the beginning. Lady Mariko's husband comes in and tells him they're going places, but he is like upset about what's happening here, calls the guy a warlock. And then the guy suggests that he's too tense. He needs to sleep with a woman. There's, of course, Mariko there. So we're starting the process of this idea of them possibly getting together down the road here. But he is almost offended by it, Blackthorn is. And she has to explain to him, we think this is a good thing because it helps your health. And then later on in the episode, when they revisit this conversation, she says the same thing, pillowing with somebody, and mentions how it's like clouds in the rain and all of that. So this is an interesting element of it coursing throughout this episode. Their kind of possible affection growing for each other as they speak about something like this. So clearly, at least in a way, this episode is addressing that kind of thing by making it very plain when they talk about making love, which is makes sense because it's not from the puritanical Catholic point of view where we're taught through religion how sex should only be this. It's very much seen from a more of the Eastern point of view, which is it's all part of a human's experience. It's all part of connective things going on here. So I found that to be interesting, and maybe that's how they addressed it, but I don't know if that's in the book.
So it is all in the book. Oh. One thing, by the way, James Clavell, between China and Java and Japan and Iran and the other countries that he goes in, he has more words for sex, orgasms, and bodily parts than you could possibly imagine. I found them all very amusing. Yeah. Definitely all in the book. Keep in mind, and it happens in the miniseries too, she doesn't just offer him a woman. She offers him a man or a
yeah,
boy.
Right. If he wants that. Yeah, right.
If that, he's like, if that's what you're into. And in the book, that is a huge freak out. I mean, like, you know, he's right. Like, what, you think I'm a goddamn sodomite, I think is what he says. And he just totally loses it. And all of Mariko and the maids are all bowing and apologizing and going like, what's up with this guy? Why is he so angry? Who cares if someone wants a boy or a woman? It's just sex. You know, it's just why would we care? And I think those elements, you know, it's so funny because, you know, I came from Star Trek, which is like, the enemy is just someone you don't understand, that these are cultural differences, but they're, once you get to know them, you'll understand them. And that's really what Shogun is. Yeah. I mean, Shogun is really about, and I think for me, formatively, even though, you know, some of the aspects of it I like less as a grown-up, but going like, oh, we don't have to treat sex as this big deal. We don't have to be ashamed of our bodies. This is just all natural stuff. Those are great things for me to learn about at that time, you know?
Yeah, agreed. Well, let's wrap up our conversation here, Steve. We've hit all the big events that happened in the in the show, this particular episode, but I do want to come back to this thing that I mentioned earlier where Yabushige is talking to his son, and his son is like, how could you, why would you want me, why would you keep Yabushige around, right? I'm sorry, Toranaga is talking to his son.
Right.
Why would you keep Yabushige around? This makes no sense. Why would you do this kind of thing? And Toranaga has to school him and says, you are playing a game of friends and enemies when you only have yourself in this life. And that's kind of been the theme of this particular episode. So that kind of struck me, to be honest with you, at a time in my life when I'm trying to put things together and move things around, and you start to question people's motives and people's intentions on things. It's an interesting line to hit you, because we do, from a historical aspect, know that the character that Toranaga is based on is a person who was very wise and led Japan to a time of peace for many, many years. Yet he's saying you are playing a game of friends and enemies when you only have yourself in this life. But I guess when you're at that level of politics and political machinations, certainly we're seeing it playing it now in our election season, people are going to say and do certain things that they wouldn't normally say or do behind closed doors, but they're doing them in the public eye in order to keep certain things in motion. What did you think about the line here and that kind of being a prevalent thing throughout this entire episode?
It syncs up so much with me in the way I think, maybe not in the everyone's your enemy. I don't think that at all.
Right.
That's not what I think. But I do think is that, to me, and you've heard me say this many times, is I think a lot about eyes on the prize. What am I trying to do? It doesn't matter who Yabushige is. You know what I mean? Yeah. I can't trust Yabushige. I can use him to get to where I want to go. And I'm not saying that therefore we should use people. That's not my point either. My point is, what are we trying to do? Like, so much, and you know, you bring up our political world today, and I'm not going into the politics.
No, but
the way that our political world works today is those people are evil and they're the enemy and therefore must be destroyed. And therefore all of my people must be good.
Yeah.
And that is not reality. That just isn't reality. And none of that has to do with how do we make our country better? You know,
right.
Like we're playing a game of friends and enemies when we actually have our own goals, when we actually like are trying to, I don't need to destroy my enemy. I need to get the things that I need to get. Yeah. Like, you know, it's like there's that line, you know, I know you love Ken Burns' Civil War documentary as much as I do. And there's the line of Lincoln. It's like, if I could save the Union and keep slavery, I would do that. And if to save the Union, I had to destroy slavery, I would do that. My goal is to save the Union. And it's like, this is the thing that I think about. It's like, if he could make a deal with it, he hates Ishido, but if he could make a deal with Ishido and become Shogun and have the country work well and give Ishido gets a lot of money, Toranaga would totally do that because that's what he wants. He's not trying, you know, it's the point isn't who's my enemy. The point is, what is my goal, you know?
And we see it play out in the final scene. And I should mention this, the final scene of the show, or one of the final scenes of the episode that I didn't touch on, is when he comes in and resigns from the council after Ishido essentially said, well, we're going to vote on it and he's going to be gone. And they have a little battle, him, Ishido and, oh God, what's the Lord there who sent the people against him, who attacked in the forest. They have a back and forth about this whole thing. And so you see that there's a little bit more going on here between them that might be leading to a bit of division. So I'm very curious to see how that's going to play itself out here. But then his right-hand man shows up and essentially says he's resigned from the council. And they go, well, it doesn't, Ishida said, it doesn't matter. We're going to vote him out 4-1, 4-0. And Kamoshige says, well, you can't, because the rule is 5 must vote. There must be 5 votes either way. And since you do not have 5 people anymore. So you see the close-up on Ishido is so great to end the episode. And the look on his face of like, God, mother. So I love that as an ending, because he's outsmarted them yet again. So at some point, is Ishido going to lose all pretense of manners and civility and go after him full bore? Or is he going to start to see that maybe he's got to come to Todonaga's side? I'm going to be very curious to see as we go through these next few episodes. What do you think of that scene there and how they played out? And is that the way it is in the book?
It is not exactly where it is in the book, but it is definitely, you need 5 votes. And there's more in the book about who would this fifth person be? How do you get a fifth person?
Right.
You know, the one other thing that I wanted to bring up, just because I think the final moment of the episode is fantastic, which is we set up this diving thing,
and that they're
going to race. I love, which is also in the book, that Mariko says, do not let him win. Thing though that I thought about is, yes, Blackthorn is now going to try his hardest and not let Torunaga win, but what did Torunaga do for maybe the last hour is make Blackthorn repeatedly dive into the water over and over and over again. Blackthorn is tired at this point. And it's a classic Torunaga strategy, is that I said, no, you have to play fair with me. Don't let me win. But I tired you out in front of time to give myself a tiny little advantage. I love that. I love that. And but then there's this moment. They're both standing on the, you know, the gunwale of the ship. They're both looking at each other. We're about to dive in. And I forget the exact line, but Torunaga kind of looks over and goes, let us begin, or something like that.
Right.
And there is a sense, and this is what film can do that books can't. That moment of them diving into the water together, both taking a leap of faith after Torunaga says, let us begin, is saying, we are together now.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You and I are going to do something great. That's what that moment feels like as they dive into the water.
Well, there's a symbolism of that. Both of them racing to the shore. In essence, racing to the end of this thing and arriving together safely, right? That's kind of a goal here, where they are now together, united, to try to make this happen, to help Japan reach the shore, because right now it's out to sea a little bit. So there's symbolism in that moment as well. And I should correct myself. Hiromatsu is who brings in the scroll there to Todonaga resign from the council. I apologize to anybody who's upset about me saying the wrong character name, because sometimes you guys get upset. So I just want to clarify that. All right. Any final words here, Steve, as we wrap up this review?
No, I'm having a ball, though. I really feel like they're killing it. I'm kind of curious to hear. I'm really glad. That's why I keep checking in with you, that you who haven't read the book are still with it and enjoying as much as I do. And it makes me very happy that you are.
100%. And because they're doing, and I should give a shout out to the writer, Shannon Goss, who adapted this particular episode, wrote this particular episode, and it was directed by Charlotte Brandstrom. I thought they absolutely nailed, again, just like the first two episodes, the right mix of the political intrigue and the stakes with the very real organic humor that can happen in situations like this that keep you entertained along with the more serious exchanges that are going on, and some great action sequences and fight sequences that I thought worked really well. And Charlotte Brandstrom definitely deserves a lot of credit for directing this episode. I mean, the shot from above of seeing them all running through the alley.
Oh, so cool.
Way to show what the odds are, right? And so much of her other shots throughout the show I thought were fantastic, especially the action sequence between the two of the ships going at each other, trying to skirt around the rocks.
Really, really well done.
Yeah, very, very good direction.
Yeah, and right, just as well. Something just occurred to me, and it's just my secret hope, which is that I just suddenly went, well, you know, this is great. I'm loving it. Shogun is not my favorite James Clavell book.
No.
And I suddenly went, ooh, if this is a success, can you do Taipan next? Taipan is my favorite James Clavell book.
Oh, that's a good point.
I would love to see that, because there's that horrible movie with what's his name, whose name I don't remember. Totally draw a blank. And the movie sucks. It's not a good movie. There's a Noble House movie, which I think is Pierce Brosnan in it, and it might have been a miniseries. And
Brian Brown is the lead in Taipan.
Brian Brown, yes, yeah. So Taipan is a great book, and this treatment would be amazing if they could pull it off. And then they could do Noble House, and then I'll be happy.
Yeah, they go through the Clavelliverse, I guess you would say.
Exactly, the Clavelliverse. They are all connected. They're all connected.
That's true. Oh yeah, right. Exactly. That I do know about the book, so it could be interesting. All right, well, there you go. That's our spoiler review for episode 3 here of Shogun. Tomorrow is tomorrow. We appreciate you all listening to us or hearing us. Thank you so much for joining us for this conversation here. Steve, brother, much love to you. Thanks so much for joining. I'm so happy we're going down this journey together. So much of our interests coming together in one show, and it's a blast to have you giving us the book side of things as well as your thoughts on what's going on in the series here. Where can people find you and everything going on?
SR Morris on Twitter, SR Morris 1 on Instagram. And of course, we're continuing the epic. This will be our longest season of a director ever.
Yeah.
We are in our season of Scorsese. We just finished Goodfellas. Part 1 of Raging Bull is up now. Part 2 of Raging Bull, I will go back to editing as soon as I get off of this recording. And then right after that, we're going to roll into The Last Temptation of Christ. So that is some exciting stuff happening on The Cinephiles.
Absolutely. If you guys don't know about The Cinephiles, it's a show that Steve and I co-host. We've been co-hosting as a podcast for the last 8 years, this show, talking about one great film every week, breaking it down, sometimes over multiple parts. And as he mentioned, we are in the season of Scorsese right now. So come and take a chance. We've probably covered a film that you love, multiple films that you love over these last 8 years. So come and take a chance and hang out with us and listen to us if you enjoy our exchanges here on this review. All right, take care of yourselves. Be well. Follow me at The Roka Says. Subscribe to the channel. Hit the bell button. Leave a comment. Share it on social media. And come back and join us next week for another brand new spoiler review episode here of Shogun on the Outlaw Nation. Peace. Until then.